Sankranti 2024, and the first part of the Sunday satsang, we're discussing a topic of understanding Shastra by reading quotations from the books of Sri Satyanarayana Das Babaji Maharaj from Jiva Institute in Vrindavan. He describes different points of Shastra, how Shastras are written, why Shastras are written, what's the intention of the author, the different methods of speech, the different methods of interpretation. The ultimate conclusion, what he says, to understand Shastra, we should sit upasana, we should sit near asan. Upa asa means we should sit near the guru and learn the Shastra directly from the mouth of the guru. This is the best way. This is the only way, actually, in one sense. So he says that the true abhideya, the true ultimate conclusion of Shastra, is bhakti. All the different Shastras, I mean, Srutis, Shrutis, Itihasas, Mahabharata, Ramayana, every Shastra, the ultimate purpose is bhakti. Although it talks about jnana, talks about karma, talks about yoga, talks about Brahma, Sayuja Mukti, all kinds of muktis. But the ultimate conclusion of all of it is bhakti. So he says here, although various methods and ways of yoga and meditation have been described throughout the Shastra, the real intention of Shastra culminates only in pure bhakti, uttam bhakti. Other descriptions are made for people who are ineligible for pure bhakti, because they have other personal desires. Even describing other methods of meditation, of yoga, karma, etc., the intention of the Shastra is still to bring even these practitioners to pure devotion in a gradual manner. So every karma yogi, every ashtanga yogi, every Advaitin Advaitavadi, every Ramavadi, everybody is doing any kind of spiritual activity, ultimately they're going to become pure devotees. Because this is the nature of the jiva, jivara surupaya Krishna nityadas, is to be a servant of Krishna. So ultimately in some life, if they don't attain perfection in their path, they'll come to bhakti. That's one point he makes in this book, Bhakti Sandarbha, page 137. Radhe, 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 Radhe. He says the Shastras are infallible. What are the Shastras? The Shastra is either the direct words of Bhagavan Sri Krishna or highly self-realized sages who have seen the truth, Tattva-darshis. The Shastra contains flawless knowledge transmitted for the highest good of human society. For the Shastra to bear fruit, however, it must be followed per the prescription of Shastra. One cannot expect to receive the result of Shastra by not following what's told in the Shastra. That's obvious. You have to know about what is bhakti, how to practice it, but from studying the Shastra, then you have to follow it. Then if you follow what the Shastras teach, you get the result that the Shastras promise. What is the result of Bhakti Shastra? The result is prema, happiness, bliss, satisfaction, and eternal liberation in the land of loving service of Radha Krishna. That's what the Shastras promise. So if we follow properly, we'll get that result. Proper knowledge of Shastra comes from an authentic guru, authentic guru. Prabhupada always used the term bona fide. Are you a bona fide guru? So he says authentic. Authentic means real. By studying in a recommended manner. This is the missing link in the chain of success for bhakti. What is the missing link? Authentic guru. Shastras are there. Shastras have been here forever. But getting a fortune and mercy to have an authentic guru, that's rare. That's very rare. So the point is being made here is shastras are infallible and they're perfect. They're given by God or God-realized people. And the way to study them is study them with someone who's connected to God, spiritual teacher, mentor, wisdom teacher, they say. Radhe, 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 Govinda. Radhe, 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 Govinda. Govinda, Gopal. Govinda, Gopal. Okay. The basic principle of Shastra is there's only one absolute truth. Jiva Goswami explains in the very beginning of Bhagavad Puran explains the absolute truth is identified as Krishna, who is designated as Swayam Bhagavan. The most original and essential is Krishna is God in his own most original essential being. No one is independent of Krishna. This fact has been demonstrated in Krishna Sandarbha. No one is equal to Krishna. And there's no possibility of anyone being superior to him. What's that word that describes that? No one's equal, no one's superior. You got it.
Asamurdva.
Asa means equal. Asa means not equal. And urdva means above. Urdva. Like Uta, Urdhva, he's going up. No one is equal to Krishna, no one's above Krishna. So Ram Bhaktis may have an issue with that. Vishnu Bhaktis may have an issue with that. Vishnu Bhaktis hold the dictionary and say, look here, it says, look up the word Krishna. Krishna, eighth avatar of Vishnu. So Vishnu is supreme. Close the book. Now what do you say? Oh, Webster's wrong. Webster's dictionary is wrong. Oxford Dictionary is wrong. I always say my guru has taught me this phrase, the absolute truth is subjective. You see it this way, I see it that way, and all ways of seeing are perfect in their own way. So live and let live, they say. So we agree with that. That's the peaceful way to go. But if you want to create bait and difference, then you're in Kali Yuga, then you have a fight in your hands. Then it's a big mess. As you can see in the world today. Most all fights are caused by religion. Lack of love, lack of harmony. The source of love and harmony is the source of discord and fighting. Very interesting idea. The God, the one God, Allah, Jehovah, Krishna, whatever you want to call him. He represents love and integration, harmony, oneness, harmony, peace. But everybody has different religions and different ways of understanding God. Everybody's fighting over it, which is based on envy. So God represents love, and everybody follows God's full of envy. This is the irony of the thing. God is representing love. And the goal of all religions is love. And each religion is envious of the other guy. Something got wrong, you know. By the time we got from there to here, something got screwed up. On the way down. It came down as love, harmony, and peace. And when we got on the earth flat, it turned into discord, fighting, and envy. Funny thing, huh? Best thing is don't try to figure out how or why. Just get out. Go to Krishna. Okay, let's see what we have here. 326A. 363. I don't know why that says 363. Nothing there. 458. This is about Shastra. We're still talking about Shastra. This, I think, is the fourth or fifth class on Shastra. Trying to understand what it is before we get into it so much. There's something called agamas, agamas and tantras and all these things. So he says the Vedas are divided into three divisions: Karmakanda, Upasanakanda, and Gyanakanda. Means work, worship, and knowledge. Work is karma, upasana is worship, and jnana means knowledge in a general way. Karmakanda refers to ritualistic acts like yajnas, Agnihotra, and all these, Chaturmasya, Soma. Upasana is related to bhakti upasana. And Gyanakanda is related to philosophical insight, to understand the ultimate truth. The subject of Upasanakanda is explained in detail in the Agamas. So the Agamas describe Upasanakanda. Whenever you read Hari Bhakti Vilas or other books that describe practices of bhakti, like Bhakti Rasmini Sindhu, oftentimes Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, always quoting Agama, Agama Shastra. Agama means Tantra. There's white Tantra and black Tantra. Black Tantra is for tamagun type activity, and white Tantra is for worshiping God, for doing good, good to yourself and good to other people. But black Tantra is for doing bad to other people, usually, exploiting the world, exploiting other people. So that's why Tantra as a word usually has a negative connotation, because only you understand the black Tantra, not the white Tantra. The whole method of worship and puja of Krishna and Vishnu and Nrisimha is all based on Tantra. Narada Pancharatra, that's the Tantric literature. All kinds of puja books are all Tantra. So there's three types of Tantra. One thing I can say, we can keep in mind, with everything everywhere, is three. Three is a magic number. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, tamagun, sattvagun, rajagun. Day, noon, and night. Rich, medium, middle class, and poor. Tall, medium, height, short. Everywhere, threes. Lower planetary system, middle planetary system, upper planetary system, Bhur, Bhuva, Swa. There you go. There's Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka. There's three holy dogs. There's three Krishnas. There's Vrindavan Krishna, Dwarka Krishna, Kurukshetra Krishna. So you want one, then go to Hardwar Rishikesh. Oh, you're in good shape. But you gotta come out of that home, then you're in bad shape. That's A-U-N-M. You get any other letters of the alphabet, you're in trouble. A-U-M. Oh. You're good. So, Tantra is three types: Vaishnava Tantra, Shaiva Tantra, and Shakta Tantra. Vaishnava Tantra is what we follow. Shaiva Tantra, Shaivites follow, and Shakta is worship. Any Shakti form of Bhagavan or Devas is called Shakta, Shakta Tantra. Worshipping Radharani comes from Shakta Tantra. Worshipping Durga, Parvati comes from Shakta Tantra. So Vishnu worship, Shiva worship, Devi or Durga. Vaishnava Agamas is divided, everything is three into three into three. There's three kinds of tantras, and one of them is Vaishnava. And Vaishnava tantras divide into three. Like one time Prabhupada was explaining, they asked Prabhupada a question. Why is there 8,400,000 species of life? He said, there's three modes of nature. So 3 times 3 is 9, times 9 is 81, times 81 is 8,000. he did his multiplication like this. It's hard to tell you, I heard it myself. So, yeah, 3 times 3 is 9, 9 times 9 is 81, 81 times 81 is 81,000. There's some kind of missing link in that calculation. So basically you say that the 8,400,000 species are different combinations of the three modes of nature. A cockroach, take classic cockroach, Swiss cockroach, German cockroach, Indian cockroach, American cockroach, Russian cockroach. And how much percent is the tongue? 98%. 98% tongue, 0.5% tongue. Yeah, because he knows where the mobbers are. Yes, it's so like this. So why do you talk about three divisions? What are the three divisions? Shastra, Pancharatra, Bhagavat, and Vaikanasa, the son of Salinia, Puja. And Agama Shastras, they deal with mantra, diksha, vidhi, bhuta, shuddhi, nyas, dhyan, swadhyaya, japa, all this kind of stuff. Now, mandir, establishing mandir. That goes like that. According to different classifications, there are four divisions of tantra. Any tantric literature, whether it's Vaishnava tantra, Shiva tantra, or Shakti Tantra, describes Gyan, knowledge and its nature, yoga, concentration of the mind and the way to do it. Kriya means building of temples and consecration, establishing murtis. And Charya means religious rites and social observances. That's just a little summary of some things. And there's a couple more entries and we'll be done with this for today. Understanding Shastra, class number 4 or 5, I think it's 5. This interesting point that people often get confused, when you read Shastra, it says, sometimes Shastra glorifies one limb of bhakti. If you just live in Vrindavan, you'll get everything. Okay, that's the key. I'll just move to Vrindavan, I have to chant Java, I have to read Shastra, just eat and sleep and listen to music and pick up a Russian girl here or there, or a guy or whatever, Indian lady, Indian man, whatever, and I'll get perfection. I read the Shastra. So that means you're not too smart. So he explains what this means. In some Shastra passages, one particular limb of bhakti may be glorified above others, whereas elsewhere a different limb is emphasized. So you read one part of Hari Bhakti Das, it glorifies chanting Hare Krishna. 100 verses. And anybody's in Hari Nam Sangirtan, 24-hour Kirtan, all that. Oh, this is Hari Bhakti Das. Then you read 100 verses about living in Vrindavan. All living in Vrindavan is the highest thing. So these two guys are going to fight. One guy's going to say, I read in the Shastra, you chant Hare Krishna, you get perfection. The other guy say, live in Vrindavan, you get perfection. Where did you read it? Hare Bhakti Das. Where did you read it? Hare Bhakti Das. They're both fighting over the same Shastra. So he explains why is that. In the Padma Puran, this is very, all Puranas are like this, or so. He cites the Padma Puran. One can read about devotional practices like watering a tulsi plant or visiting Mathura. By reading these different Shastra descriptions of the glories, one may become in a dilemma, bewildered about what to follow and what to avoid, because it's not possible to follow everything. You go crazy. So not all prescriptions are meant for everybody. You have your own shoe size. You don't wear all the shoes in the store. Yeah, you go ahead and find one to fit and walk out with that one. So Shastra is like a shoe store. You find one that fits. You like to study all day to get perfection. Like to chant all day to get perfection. Like to tell jokes all day. Make sure the subject of your jokes is Hari Guru-Vaishnava. Without being offensive, without being envious or falsified. It's okay, you know. So, not everything in the Shastra is for everybody. Based on individual nature, it's called svabhav, and taste, svabhav and ruchi, different sadhakas are attracted to different devotional practices. Like sometimes we people do prigma three times a day, and they get all jacked up. Say me, you say, you should go around prigma? No. Oh, you should do it. It's really good. You know, my guru said, you get perfection 1 month, you'll see Krishna in 2 months, see Radharani in 3 months. They try to get you jacked up and join the party, you know. Join BJP, leave Congress high. I met so many people like this. They come and say, you should go over for a guy. I say, yeah, once in a while. No, no, you should every day. Yeah, well, all the Bhavati should every day. I said, they don't all do every day. I can list 100 right now that don't do every day. No, but, you know, anyway. But I said, look, you do it every day. You do it twice a day. That's great for you. All glory to you. I'll give you 100 rubies and a box of sweets also. But, you know, lay off, man. Don't beat me over the book, over my head, the head of my own Shastra, you know. I'm reading the same books you are, and you're trying to beat me up with the same books. So one guy came here, he's been coming here for years, and saying I should do so many dandavat frequents, so many dandavats every day. I said, yeah. I said, later. And he comes here because he asked for a donation and preached to me for a half hour about the glories of offering dandavats. And he's not a Gaudiya Vaishnava, he's a Brijavasi Brahmin. But he likes to do that. So then he tries to jack me up for doing dandavats every day. Then he says, you know, Das Goswami did 3,000 a day. I said, okay, yeah, I know that. He says, so get with it. So after 10 years, this guy comes to Rikazi. I said, okay, I'm going to start doing, I started a 555 club. I said, misery likes company, they say. There's a phrase in America, misery likes company. You're really sick and unhappy. You call a friend, I'm sick and unhappy. Yeah, me too. Oh, how are you sick? I'm sick like this. How are you sick? I'm sick like this. I have a fever 103. You're 103? Oh, that's good. I have 104. Oh, that's really bad. What are you doing for it? I'm taking this, that. Homeopathic, allopathic, Ayurvedic, seeing bad, you know, whatever. So I started this 555 club. I said, everybody's got to do 555. Five done about the Guru, five done about the Rajdhavan, and five done about the Krishna, or your Thakurji, whatever. So I had a club, 555 club. I took enrollees. I said, oh, who's signing up, you know? So I have some members dropped out. They didn't pay their fees. They didn't pay their fees. They didn't meet the requirements. I investigate every 2 months. Say, are you doing 555? Heads go down. No, you know, it's too cold. You know. It's too stiff, you know. I said, look, I'm 74. I'm doing. So that's good for you. You're the guru, you have to set the example. You're the disciple you're supposed to follow. Okay, we have half the formula worked out here. You're setting the example. So you're doing your job, that's good. You got a gold star. Well, we're not doing so good. Give us a ring. We're just little guys, you know. So it goes like that. I feel heavy pressure, you know. I feel, in the morning when I don't feel really tired and too stiff, I don't feel like doing this. But I don't want to be a hypocrite. I'm telling these guys to do it. And if I don't do it, that's going to be really bad. I can't ask anybody later, but they did. So everybody's going, every guru and disciple is going through the same dialogue. Mental dialogue. If I had to do it, they would do it. If I had to do it, my girlfriend asked me, you know, Dusty, are you doing? Yeah, I'm doing. Sure, I do two. I was doing five. I do two. I do three, 4, 4, 4. You know, cut corners, you know. Something's better than nothing. So it's a challenge. Nishtha. So whatever works or whatever your guru orders you to do or suggests you do. So the different benefits are described in Shastra to encourage people to practice. That's the basic bottom line. Basically, one should follow the instructions of one's guru regarding the most relevant sadhana practices to be adopted. That's the point of this, what he's saying. It's an interesting point, because often new devotees especially, they get confused with all the glorification of individual limbs of bhakti. Which one do I do? Like some people ask me, they say, Ankasi, I take the day off from work, I don't work that day. What's better to do? Should I chant japa all day? Should I study shastra all day? Should I sleep all day? I say, whatever you need to do. If you're too tired, sleep all day. What to say, you know. Because if I say stay awake, you fall asleep anyway, what's the point? So it's based on some roots, you know. That's why there's so many varieties of things to do. Once I asked my Gurudev about Smaran, we're supposed to live at Smaran, all these very complicated and difficult, demanding limbs of bhakti in Rag Marg, basically meditation and Lila Smaran, which only comes with a pure mind and heart and a lot of mercy descending from above and constant practice of the controlling of the mind and fixing it in the world of meditation and Lila. I said, I think I can do about 2 or 3 hours of meditation without getting spaced out a day. What do I do the rest of the day? He said, you read Bhagavatam, you chant japa, you chant some kirtan, do some puja, do some prakrama. You know, what to pass your time? You to pass your time with Krishna, what else do you do? Wash your clothes, cook your lunch. You know, that's how life goes. In some lifetime, sometime, we'll maybe be absorbed all the time in bhajan. You know, you read the biographies of Siddha Manohar. Siddha Manohar Das lived in 1890 or so, 1920 or so, 1930. He was all day in a cave, meditating on Lila. But how many Siddha Manohars are there? He was born in a Brahmin family, came here at a young age. You know, so it's not easy to imitate, but there are lighthouses, there are beacon lights to inspire us to do as best as we can. But they're on the high end of absorption. We're on the beginning end of absorption. So we shouldn't be discouraged. We just drop some water, wear away stones, so we just keep practicing. We get reciprocation even from the very beginning. That's the beauty of bhakti. Nihabi krama nasasti pradyavaya nabhidite svabhavyasadharmasya chayate mahatubhaya. Even a little bhakti gets response. Yayatamam prapadyante. Krishna says in Gita chapter 4, verse 11, you do anything, I reciprocate with you immediately. So we experience that. We just dress our deities, and we're finished dressing and offering bhoga arti, and we take darshan, and look so happy and satisfied. And we feel so happy and satisfied. That's immediate response, because they're there and they immediately respond to us. Jai Shri Radhe. So this is the point he's saying here. So let's go on and see what else we can say here. There's one other thing about Shastra, how to study Shastra. Oh. This is a definition of Parokshavad. Shastra in general is all written, it's all established, written on the principle Parokshavad. Vad means speaking, and Paroksha means indirect, hidden, confidential, indirect, implied meaning. So the definition of Parokshavad means indirect reference or instruction. It's a way of speaking in which the subject is described in such a way to conceal the real meaning. Scriptures often make use of this method to instruct those around various levels of awareness. Only those devotees on the highest stage of development can understand the true meaning of Shastra. And the Shastra is all the more relishable because of its mysterious nature. Therefore, it's said that Vishnu and Krishna and the devatas are very fond of Parokshavad. Parokshavad means the mysterious hidden meaning of Shastra. Like we were discussing last week, there's a verse in Gita, 18th chapter of Gita, verse 65. Man manaba mad bhakta madhyaji man namaskaru mami vaishasi satsande pratijanosti. So Sanskrit, the words of the Sanskrit words of this verse, madhyaji, mad means Krishna speaking to Arjuna, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, bow down to me, in this way you'll come to me, I guarantee. Prati, you'll become very dear to me, prati jane, you'll become a priyajana of me. So Sanskrit, anyone who knows Sanskrit, you can break the words in different ways. So if one phrase is madhyaji means yajana means worship, puja. Mud means me, worship me, I'm speaking, think of me, worship me. But you can also break this word madhyaji. It's mud, M-A-D, Y-H-A-I, Madhyaji. If we can Madhya, you can break it in Sanskrit, you can translate Madhya means liquor, whiskey, and Aji means goat in Sanskrit. So Krishna is saying, think of me, become my devotee, drink whiskey and eat goats. That's what the Sanskrit Shloka says, 1865. I heard this from Satyarayan Das Babaji Maharaj. He's a big pundit. He's a pundit in Vyakaran, grammar and kavya and logic and naya and everything. So he knows what he's talking about. He teaches Sanskrit. He has class in Sanskrit. Madhyaji. So if you're a materialistic person, you can translate Gita and say, Krishna is saying, think of me, drink whiskey and eat goat. What goat? What's it, Hindi for goat? Bakri?
Bakri.
Eat bakri, bakri kabo. Whiskey Pio, Bakri Kabo. Is that what Bhagavad Gita means? No. So, but Sanskrit can be justified like that. So that's Parokshavad. Indirect, you can take indirect, that's an indirect meaning, you can screw it out of it. But the real thing is that Krishna's beauty and Krishna's leelas are describing Parokshavad. So that's all we're going to speak about understanding Shastra. This is class number 5 or 4. So now we'll have a new